ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So first of all, I would like closer. Yeah. First of all, I have something to give you, and that's very simple gift. It's actually the best greetings from Satchinandana Swami. And he asked me to figure out how many of you did the homework from Sunday. He gave a homework on Sunday feast, so he told me I should come and check how the devotees are doing with the homework.
On the theoretical level.
Okay. Any other? Oh, nobody did the homework. Yeah? Yeah, we are not really accustomed to do homework in that's normal. I don't think Maharaj expected a lot of answer, but I think he just wanted to refresh a little bit what he had said last time. So today is the second part of the pastimes of Putana, who was killed by Krishna. Last time we went through the pastime in great details, and this time I would like to do just an overview of the pastime again, and then go a little deeper into the anartha that Putana represents and the teaching, actually, which is to learn beyond that pastime. It's whenever I prepare on those topics, it seems that's a vast ocean of knowledge, of details, of sweetness. And although this time I just wanted to prepare on the signification of the pastimes, I found still a lot of beautiful details on the pastime itself. But this time we will go a little through, a little faster than last week. I think you remember last week we had entered the Leela by remembering who was Putana in her previous life. She was the daughter or sister, depend the scriptures, of Bali Maharaj. And when she saw Vamanadev coming, she felt such love and affection for that small boy that she felt, oh, I would like so much to be his mother, to give him my milk, to breastfeed him. But then when she saw how Vamanadev stepped over the land and took everything from Bali Maharaj and finally put his feet on his head, and finally it happened that Bali Maharaj ended to be the director in one planet into hell, Ratnamala felt a little bit disturbed by Vamanadev, and she said, okay, one day I will give you milk, but I will also give you poison for what you did to my brother. So, some life later, she became Putana in the pastimes of Krishna. Now, I think there was actually a very, very important point to remember into that first part of the Leela. I don't know if any one of you got it last time. That was actually this very important desire, very small desire to do service. When Ratnamala saw Vamanadev, she had this desire, oh, I want to give him service. I want to give him, to become his mother. And just because of that desire, it will be fulfilled in the future. And the point is that as soon as the jiva has this small desire inside his heart to serve the Lord immediately accept the service. Although the service might not be done immediately now, but just because of that desire, the Lord will arrange that one day the jiva will be able to give the service. So just at the root of desiring to serve Krishna, Krishna already take the service. Krishna will make the necessary arrangement that the service will be offered to him in the future. Now, the beginning of the pastimes, we hear about Nanda Maharaj who goes to Mathura to pay his taxes to Kamsa, but there was also another reason for that. And that's amazing in Gopal Champu, how many details we find about that, at least this particular instance. But Vasudev had sent a messenger to Vrindavan asking Nanda Maharaj to come immediately to Mathura, because Vasudev was very anxious to know what had happened with Krishna. He had brought Krishna in Mathura. Now 3 months had passed and he was very anxious to see if everything was alright with the child, if everything was peaceful there in Vrindavan, in Gokul. So Nanda Maharaj went, paid his taxes and then spent intimate time with Vasudev. But then Vasudev told him, don't delay. Go as soon as possible to Braj, to Gokul. Maybe some bad things could happen there. Your presence is required there. Please go fast. And then Nanda Maharaj went back to Vrindavan, and in his mind, all the time, he was anxious. He was thinking, Vasudev is a great devotee. Maybe what he said is the truth. And what if something happened to Krishna? I'm not there to protect him. Any one of you remember what Nanda Maharaj did in that emotion of anxiety? He took shelter at the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller. And then Prabhupada mentioned in Krishna book that actually that's what the devotees are doing. The devotees are understanding that at every step of our life there are dangers. So therefore the devotees, at any moment, they are actually taking shelter at the Lord's lotus feet. And Prabhupada mentioned in one purport that actually as more as one progresses in spiritual life, as more one will take shelter. Often we think, at least for myself, I think the opposite. More I become advanced, more strong I am, and less I need to take shelter. But actually more one progresses, more one will take shelter at any circumstances. So while Nanda Maharaj was on his way to Gokul, Putana, which was actually deputed by Kamsa to kill all the young boy and to kidnap all the young woman, young girl, went to Gokul. She was looking like a mendicant. She had matted locks of hair that were in disarray. She had sharp teeth and she was able to devour small children like brahmacharis will devour plate of halava with a rumbling sound. She flew on the root of a secret tree and went to Vrindavan during the night. Now she knew in Vrindavan there are not only cowherd boys, there are also some warriors, some archers, we say, those who have bows and arrow, and she knows some have this Narayan arrow. They have some mantra, some special tics. I need to be careful to accomplish my mission. I will need actually to disguise myself. So she took the form of a very beautiful young girl, around 16 years old. She had Malika flower on her hair, and her hair were beautifully surrounding her beautiful face. She had brilliant earrings and she was smiling very attractively to everybody. She came at Nanda Maharaj's house, everyone was looking at her, thinking, "Is that must be the death, the goddess of fortune. She's so attractive, she's so beautiful." Nobody could suspect who she was. She was, of course, using some of her mystic power to hide herself, but there was also the Lila Shakti of Krishna that was acting so that the pastimes could go on in that way. Now, Putana approached the quarters where Krishna was sleeping. Almost, she came to Yasoda, Mai, and almost in tears, with a choking voice, Putana spoke to Yasoda. "Oh, Yasoda, you have become so hard-hearted because you are so busy and you keep this tender baby lying on the bed while you carry on your household duty. You are not giving full attention to your child. When I heard about your child, I came here immediately. Just like a jasmine flower become joyful at spring, my eyes become so joyful by seeing that beautiful child. My breasts are overflowing with nectar, and if any child drink that nectar, he will obtain a perfect body. So I will become his nurse, and I will give him great happiness." Thus, saying those words, Putana entered the room where Krishna was. And she saw Krishna, who was lying on a bed, which was white like the ray of the moon. And Krishna looked like a great emerald that was sprouting out of a field of powder camphor. Very beautiful analogy. So Putana saw this beautiful boy, Krishna. And she understood this boy has the power to destroy the entire universe. This boy has the power to destroy all the demons and myself also. She saw Krishna like a fire which was just covered, hidden by ashes. But at the same time, Krishna looked so tender, so helpless, that she felt, I can still kill him. And here is also interesting point to connect with our own life. We know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We know that he's all the time seeing us. We know what we are supposed to do or not to do. But still, sometimes we are pushed to act into the wrong way, although we know that. And that was actually the case of Putana. Although she had this vision of who was Krishna, her demoniac tendency in her heart pushed her to keep on trying to accomplish her plan to kill Krishna. Outwardly, she looked very sweet, very motherly, very kind, but innerly she was very cruel. She was like a sword, a sharp sword that was put into a soft cloth. Then she desired to put Krishna on her lap. But inside of her, she had a frightening voice. She was again thinking, but what will happen if I continue on my plans? So at that time, Krishna closed his eyes. And there are four reasons why Krishna closed his eyes. Anyone remember? Anyone of you remember maybe one of the reasons? Yeah? Yeah, certainly. I'm not sure I got the German properly. Yeah?
She said because he couldn't see her face.
Yeah.
Because she was so cruel.
Yeah.
And because she killed so many children.
Yeah, yeah. Very good. Very good. Any other of you remember?
Don't bless her. Er wollte sie nicht vorher segnen.
Mhm.
He didn't didn't want to bless her because
yeah.
this cleanse
He knew Putana will do a very inauspicious act, and he knew my glance is all auspicious, so it doesn't fit together, so better I close my eyes. Very good. Another, yeah?
He wanted to encourage her that she does act.
Yeah, he closed his eyes, telling Putana, don't worry, everything will be fine for you. Yeah. And the last, anyone? Yeah, she was a woman, and she will be the first demon he will kill. So he felt a little ashamed about that, so he just closed his eyes. So Putana took baby Krishna on her lap, and she gave him her breast to drink. So Krishna hold her breast with his hands, and with the cup of his lips started to drink the milk. Now when everyone looked at that scene, everyone was in ecstasy in Nanda Maharaj's house. Everyone was thinking, wow, look, our baby Krishna is getting the milk from this goddess. Yasoda was thinking, is she the mother of Krishna? Or am I the mother of Krishna? She was bewildered, such a beauty. But suddenly, they saw that Krishna did not seem to like that milk. He was making distasteful face. And then Krishna started to squeeze her breast stronger and stronger and stronger, and then started to suck first the poison, then the milk, and then started to take out her life air out of her body. And Putana, first she started flailing her arms and hands, and then she started to try to push that baby off, but she was just unable. So she just stood up and ran out of the house, screaming, child, leave me, child, leave me, child, leave me. This sound was resounding in the three planetary system. The mountains started to tremble. Everyone just threw themselves on the ground, thinking that thunderbolts were falling off. And Putana was running and running, and she was getting back her original form of a demoness, of a Rakshasi. She was becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. Finally, she opened wild her mouth. She opened her arms, and she just fell on the floor dead. When Mother Yasoda saw what was passing, she just became totally stunned. She was saying, she was like mad. She could not move, but she could just speak. And she was saying, alas, how painful. Considering my son to be a priceless blue sapphire, the Nagapatnis took him to adorn their forehead. Thinking Krishna to be a fragrant flower from the Tamal tree, the Gandavas took him to decorate their breasts. Mistaking my son for the moon, has Shiva put him in his matted locks? Are the activity of that wicked demon the result of my bad karma? Or is it just the freak play of destiny? While lamenting like this, Yasoda made few steps and finally fell down unconscious on the floor. The Brajbasis started to run all around to find out what had happened. And then they found Putana on the floor. They did not know what was this amazing form. They thought it's a mountain which had unclipped wings. I think it's amazing, but sometimes it is said that in the past time, mountains would have wings and would fly. So the sometimes mountains will get their wings cut by Indra's thunderbolts and fall here and there. But at that time, the cowboy was thinking, is it a mountain which had unclipped wings, like the wings were gone? And then they were thinking, are we maybe on the spell of some illusion? What is now happening? Putana had hairs like color of copper, and her eyes, the holes of her eyes were like deep wells. Her thighs were like the river, the bank of a river. Her stomach was like a dried up lake, and her breast were like two hills. Krishna was still on the breast of that demoness, and he was kicking with his feet on her heart, thus giving her his full mercy by the touch of his lotus feet. Now, because the breasts of Putana were really like a very nice playground, Krishna decided to climb on it to play, but also he decided to climb on the breast of Putana so that the Brajvasi could see him, because they were all down and he was on the top of Putana. She had really a huge, huge, huge body. So he decided to climb on the breast so that everyone could see him, and thus he looked like a very small and beautiful cloud on a mountain peak. So when the Brajvasi saw Krishna there, they all climbed up the body of Putana, that was the strong man of Vrindavan, and then they took Krishna and they passed Krishna from one to another in the hand until Krishna was down on the earth, and then they brought Krishna back to the house. When they brought the child to Yasoda, they said, "Yasoda, Krishna is here." But she looked like totally unconscious or gone, like in a dream. And she was saying, "Why are you joking with me? Why are you telling me such things?" So then they put Krishna on her lap, and then she could come back to her senses and could realize that by great fortune Krishna was again there. And she embraced her son, and tears were flowing. At the meantime, Nanda Maharaj arrived and found out about what had happened. He never could imagine such a calamity. So he just ran to the house to see his boy. And when he found Krishna, he also embraced Krishna. And here I have to read. There was a very beautiful description. Nanda Maharaj picked up his son and affectionately smelled his head. He felt as if the seed of bliss had sprouted within his heart. Overwhelmed with unlimited pleasure, Nanda's mind melted with ecstatic feeling and his eyes streamed tears of happiness. So Upananda, who was also one of the chief of Vrindavan, ordered all the men from a lower caste to now cut the body of Putana and to burn it. So because that body was so huge, they had really some hard work to cut all this giant body, and they met many different fires all around, and they started to burn that body of the demoness. But amazingly, a very delicious or very beautiful, or I don't know if you can say delicious for fragrance, but can we? Aromatic, very aromatic fragrance came out of this fire. And the reason was that Putana had been totally purified by the touch of Krishna. And therefore, her body was totally pure and was smelling so good. It was the smell of aguru, and for weeks and weeks and even months, this smell was staying in Braj. That even when people will come from outside, they will all ask, "What? From where is that smell coming?" And that smell was able to just purify all living entities that will smell that. They will just become, their sin will be destroyed just by the smell of this aroma. All those fire made a lot of smoke, and the smoke transformed in clouds, and after sometimes rain fell down with this beautiful aromatic smell coming and pervading the whole atmosphere. So here the pastime ends. And now we will go into the anatta which Putana is representing. So the basic of this knowledge that I will give you now is coming from one article from Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur that was published in The Harmonist. And Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj is saying that's a very aggressive preaching. That's very straightforward and very, very strong preaching. I got also a lot of information from his own seminar on the demons in Vrindavan, and also from the Krishna Katamrita Bindu from Madhavananda, who they have really very, very deep research also into into the scriptures in general. So there is a very deep allegory into that pastime. First of all, we have Kamsa. Kamsa is the person which is beyond all the anattas, all the demons. And he represents the aggressive empiricist. He represents the chief materialist. And he represents the mundane religious institution. That's a little far out when one think religious institution, we don't think that could be anything bad behind that. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati will give a lot of elaboration on that. Often he speak about the church, so I translate it more into institution, because I think at the time when Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati wrote that article, it was in 1930, he was addressing himself mostly in the English language, mostly for the English people, and he always speak about churches. So Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj also was mentioning one can translate that into religious, mundane religious institutions. So like Putana is the first demon coming to Krishna, this obstacle is the first in the life of the devotees. And we see Kamsa is like the head of this religious mundane institution, the head of materialism, and he is sending the anattas, he is sending the demons. And Putana represent the false guru. So there are three type of false guru that are mentioned in this context. There is the one who is preaching that sense enjoyment and liberation are the main goal of life. There is the false guru who is teaching beyond his own adhikar or his own understanding, or who is preaching to elevated topics to those who do not have the adhikar to understand that topic. And the third dimension of the false guru is one's own mind. So I will try to go a little bit into those three dimensions of the false guru. I will try to get some points that are relevant and to not have the atmosphere sink into the weight of all those pseudo gurus. But what is important to understand is that Putana comes and she is coming to kill Krishna, who is a baby. Actually, Kamsa is very fearful of having truth coming up, or really spiritual truth coming up. So immediately when he knows that Krishna is there and he is a child, he wants to cut that immediately. And Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati used very, very strong words by saying, through the established religious institution and with the cooperation of their worldly parents, those Putana do not let the chance of real spirituality to appear in the child that just take birth. on earth. So this hard institution and the mundane parents together will cooperate so that the real spiritual truth will not be able to develop into their children, into the newborn baby. So it's a little bit like this for us also when we come in contact with Krishna consciousness. It is said that when we become devotee, it's like Krishna is appearing in our heart. And at that time, Krishna is just a baby. He's very fragile. And at that time, it's very, very important for the aspiring devotee to be careful to not be in contact with those pseudo-guru who are actually making a play. They are actually coming and proposing nourishment. Like Putana, she's coming to give nourishment to Krishna. But actually, they are giving poison. They are giving wrong tattva or wrong understanding of the absolute truth. So, now we will go a little bit into some classification of those false guru. One that we hear very often speaking about are called the Mayavadis. I'm sorry, that's a little bit the thematic. Nobody likes really to criticize or to say those one are wrong or we are right or things like this, but that's how it is. How it is, what to do. But it's interesting to note how Prabhupada was so often preaching against those who are Mayavad, and especially that especially those who preach that the goal of life is to merge into the Brahmayoti, and often they are very offensive because they say that Krishna do not have any form or any pastimes or anything. They don't want to see him as a person, therefore it's very offensive toward Krishna. But Prabhupada was preaching so hardly and so often against Mayavad. And even in the beginning, when it was the beginning of Krishna consciousness in New York, there was all those hippies who were there, and Prabhupada will always start his lecture by using 10 or 15 minutes to speak about those Mayavadis and preach against them. And the hippies did not know at all who were the Mayavadis. So they were thinking, yeah, Prabhupada is maybe a little old and maybe he had once a bad experience with those Mayavadis in India. So therefore he's all the time speaking like this. But actually Prabhupada had his reason to speak about those Mayavadis like this, because actually Mayavadism is spread. It's not only in the family of Mayavad, but the Mayavad philosophy can be found in many other religion or many other philosophy. Once I heard a devotee saying, "Why is Prabhupada preaching so much against Mayavad?" And then his understanding was, actually, I think Prabhupada is preaching to the impersonalist, which is hiding inside my heart. And here, I think it's also very, very interesting to observe a little bit that point. We always think the Mayavadis, that's them, and we are the Bhaktas, huh? We are the devotee of Krishna. But is there also some trace of Mayavad philosophy, Mayavad understanding in our heart? How personal are we dealing with Krishna? How personal are we dealing with the devotees of Krishna? I'm just right now doing a service to publish a CD. We just recorded a CD with Sachinandana Swami this year, and I'm doing the publishing of trying to synchronize the devotees who do services. And I did not think it was necessary to put picture of devotees singing on the CD. And when Maharaj heard that, he said, "Hey, what's that? We are not impersonal. It's good to make picture of the devotee. It's nice. It's personal." So I think in our own dealings also we can see, you can check out how much personal we are, and especially with the devotees. How much are we acting with the devotees? If they are just colleagues or co-workers, you do that service, I do that service, or I need this help, can you give me this or give me that? Or how much actually are we dealing with them in a personal way, in a caring way? And as more actually we are able to have this personal relationship with the devotees, as more actually we will develop a personal relationship with Krishna. When devotees come to the temple, when we meet devotees, are we there to offer our obeisances, to ask how they are doing, to ask if we can serve them? Or do we feel, oh, let me just escape in the behind door and just go and do my reading in a peaceful place? I mean, it's also necessary sometimes. I just would like you to think a little bit on that. How is your heart personal? I leave the question open to you. That's just a little place to explore. I will not give you a homework to check, but if you like to do it, it's fine also. So now I would like to speak a little more particularly about the institution. Often this material institution is discouraging the real spirituality or the unconventional religion, and she is making everything in a mechanical process of religion. It's almost like when one forgets why one is doing his activities, why one is following rules and regulation. When it's just like this, the institution, material institution will base her preaching into external practices. Don't worry so much for God. Your duty is just to give us money. Just engage in external activity. Just engage your senses. Just be a member. Oh, there is no need to accept a guru. Huh? Oh, God was existing some thousand years ago. Now that's old. Don't worry about that. So that's the type of slogan one might hear inside institution, which are actually atheism in the disguise of theism. There are also, through those institutions, we see sometimes a lot of mechanical processes which do not go to the essence. And one example that was given is, for example, I mean, I have nothing against Christianity, please don't think I'm against it, but that's just to give an example. There was this rule of not eating fish on Friday, I think, was it? Or not eating meat on Friday, so everyone could eat fish on Friday. But after some times, this rule was not anymore there. It was just for a time. Most probably there was a reason why they were doing that, but that was a rule that was put for some time, and then the rule is gone. It's like some concocted rules and regulation that comes or that go. So that's one of the symptoms of this, the institution which is not so serious, let's say like this. And when those rules, those concocted rules are given, the result is they don't work. Because the essence is lost. Why are the rules performed? For example, in our rules and regulation, we always know that we are following them because there is a goal beyond. Who can give me what is the main goal behind all the regulations we are following? Yeah, exactly. And when there is the proper substance behind the rules, then it's not a concocted stuff, then it's the real stuff. I don't want to go too much into that, but Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita said that we should follow the rules and regulation of freedom, the rules and regulation that will free us from the material entanglement. So there are also this example of those who give interpretation from the Shastras as false guru. Like we hear in the Shastra, God is the oldest one. So then we draw a picture of God with a long beard and like the old man. Or we hear that God is the strongest one, so we make him as Mr. Atlas with a lot of muscles. That's also like type of way people or false guru might interpret the absolute truth. So now another, I think, relevant example is another type of putana, and that's the putana which use the scientific and empiric approach to the absolute truth. Like to try to understand the absolute truth with one's own senses and one's own logic. So here also, I'm thinking we also have our area to observe how much we are into this empirism, how much in our devotional life we are actually depending on our own strengths, our own logic, or our own way we think we can practice spiritual life. And how much are we into the pole of bhakti, which is actually turned into surrender and into taking shelter at the opposition of being I do everything. Of course, both need to be there, but often we have the wrong balance between the two. So it's also, I think, relevant to see. And the example is the Brajbasis. When the demons will come in Vrindavan, nobody will try to find the demon on themselves. They will just go to Krishna. They will take shelter in Krishna. They knew Krishna is the person who can save us. So also in time of difficulty, how much do we depend on our own strengths, our own logic, our own intelligence, and how much actually do we take shelter? How much do we surrender to Krishna? I think that's also a relevant point. So, now I would like to go to the next false guru. That was the false guru who is mainly preaching about impersonalism, or that sense gratification is the goal of life. Actually, we did not speak much about those one, but those one can easily be seen as family members, our friends, who will preach to us that why do you follow all those things? There is nothing after death. Let's just enjoy this life. And especially when we are young and we are in contact with those type of people, they might be able to make some cut into our devotion. They might be able to diminish our ability to serve Krishna by association with such person. And so many are preaching, there is no need of following everything. Even some institution, religious institution, who will say there is no need of following any rules. Just take intoxication, just do whatever you want, doesn't matter. And then you go to God, that's fine. So that's also those type of pseudo-guru or false guru that preach that sense enjoyment. It's what one need to do. So the second type of guru is the one who is teaching beyond his own understanding of spiritual life or beyond the understanding of his audience. And here, Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur were making a strong fight or a strong opposition to the Babajis in Radhakund, who actually give Siddha Pranali, who give the real identity to sadhakas who are sometimes really in the beginning of their spiritual life. So it really make an obvious unbalance concerning this adhikar for understanding and preaching. So that's just the example that was given in this seminar, and that's quite obvious. But I mean, it's not so relevant for us. I don't think anyone of us is ready to get Siddha Pranali mantra. So I will jump directly to the next And the next one is our own mind as a guru. And there I think we have a good space also to experience or to think about it. A guru is someone from which we accept instruction. Having faith, it will help us. And we know how much the mind is able to instruct us. It's actually the one of our closest advisors, at least in the domain of closeness, physical closeness, the mind is the closest advisor we have, and often the mind will push us towards sense gratification and actually will take us away from spiritual life. Bhujan Prabhu was mentioning very interesting detail by saying that the mind is protecting the false ego. Our identification of being the body, this is the false ego. And the mind will always defend that we can identify it with the body. Like one small example, someone chastises you and you feel hurt. Immediately the mind will start to defend the false ego, which is her. Oh, you are not in fault. This person is not better than you, and things like that. Immediately the mind come up and try to defend that false ego. So when we practice Krishna consciousness, or when we come in contact to Krishna consciousness, we are actually trying to remove that false ego. So the minds come up and try to divert that. And I think we have very clear experience when we chant japa. We are there, we want to focus, we want to be with Krishna, and the mind is just stealing away our awareness. It's just taking us all the time away. So there is two verses I would like to mention from Srimad Bhagavatam, which illustrate very nicely the mind as the false guru. That's in the fifth canto, chapter 6, and verse 2 and 5. Srila Shuka Goswami said, "My dear king, you have spoken correctly. However, after capturing animals, a cunning hunter do not put faith in them, for they may run away. Similarly, those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Indeed, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's action." And the second verse, the five of the same chapter, "The mind is the root of cause of lust, anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. Combine those constitute bondage to fruitive activity. What learned man would put faith in the mind?" Did you get the first verse? What was the analogy given? Yeah, the hunter. Huh? Like if when a hunter is capturing a beast, he will make sure that the beast is really captured. He will not just turn his back because he knows the beast will go away. If I let it go, it will go away. So in the same way, the spiritual practitioner will never let his mind like this without care. He will always keep on. So we hear, like you were saying, Bharamurti, the goal is to always remember Krishna and never forget him. So we try to remember Krishna, we try somehow to put this focus of the mind, and then this verse says, try to not just think, okay, that's fine, I did it. No, always keep watching your mind and always bring it back. So to do that, to keep this control over this false guru, over this false advisor, the material mind, we have a few advices that are given to us. And the main advice which is given is engage the mind in spiritual practices. How many of you know the story of the Jenny in connection with controlling the mind?
Jenny.
Okay, so I think I will tell it. I mean, that's quite simple story. I will not spend much time on that. But that's the story of a man who find a lamp, actually a king, who find a lamp, and inside this lamp is a jinn. And when the jinn come up, the jinn said, the jinn has a sword, and he said, give me an order immediately or I cut your head. I will fulfill all your desires, but please keep me engaged. So the king became frightened and said, okay, please clean all my kingdom. So, clean all the kingdom. So he thought, okay, now I have a little peace for a while. But 5 minutes later, the jinn came back and said, that's done. So the king said, okay, clean my entire kingdom. Not only my palace, but the whole kingdom. Do every single corner nicely. And the jinn was back 10 minutes later. So the king said, oh my God, this time I will not escape. So he said, okay, you please build up 10,000 palaces on the moon for me, and I will get a little more time. But he knew the jinn will be back very soon. So he just ran into the forest. Actually, that's the Hare Krishna version of the story. Yeah? The jinn ran into the forest and found a saint who was chanting japa. And he asked the saint, how, I explained the story, how will I ever become free of that jinn? And the bhakta smiled and gave him the japa mala. And said, when the jinn come back, you give him the mala. And you tell him to chant one round, and when he come to this bigger bit, he just turn it and chant another. And when he come, he turn, he chant. So the jinn came back, and he gave the japa to the jinn, and said, okay, now he chant Hare Krishna, explain him how to do. And after some time, the jinn became in such ecstasy that he just went back to Godhead. So that's a simple example that show that if our mind, which is there, like in the analogy, the jinn, if our mind is properly engaged, then he will get free. He will get truly happy. He will become purified. But now, how to do when you want to engage the mind and the mind do not want to be engaged? Huh? You want to engage the mind and the mind, no way. How do we deal with the mind in such a case? I think that's quite basic knowledge of Krishna consciousness. You must all have heard about those things. Who would give one suggestion how to deal with the mind? Yeah, but the question is, how? What do we do if the mind do not want to be engaged? You want to engage him, but the mind says no, no way.
I make a deal with the mind. They say, when you do this, I give you a gift.
Okay. You do some dealings with the mind. I will give you one. That's a good idea. I mean, Prabhupada speak about two ways. One said, you just neglect. Whatever the mind refuse, whatever the mind say, you just don't care. You don't give any attention and just keep on trying. And I had a very nice experience. I decided to engage more my mind in thinking about Krishna since my last visit in India. And I decided to do that when I take prasad. Before, I would take prasad and try to read and hear lecture or do emails while eating, actually really not good habits. And I thought, okay, I stop all that, and now the only thing I will do while eating, I will try to remember Krishna in some way or other. And I can see in the beginning, it's difficult The mind is just going away, away, and away, and away. But just by keeping on doing it, after some time, it works. After some time, the mind can think of Krishna and keep on thinking of Krishna, and the mind do not run away so often. It works. Just keep on doing and just ignore that the mind do not want to follow. And the other method is the hard method of shoes and broomstick to beat the mind, but that's not in the proper sense of term. It's not that we have to beat our mind on the external level, but that means to chastise the mind. Say, hey, like a child, like if a child is doing really bad behavior, you will put the voice higher. Say, hey, now you stop, now enough, and then the child is careful. So the mind also, if you just show to the mind, no, that I am here, the person who is in control, you you will not win, or you just use a certain intensity, and the mind will say, okay, fine, like the child. Also, in ignoring the mind, there is an analogy that is given of a bus driver, a person who is driving a bus, and just in the first seat in the back, I mean, yeah, let's say like this, there is a person which has some mental instabilities, and he is all the time taking the clothes of the driver, and the driver, no, I have to keep on driving. I know this person has some difficulties. I cannot do anything. I cannot chastise him. I just have to tolerate that and keep on driving. So the mind is also like this, all the time in the background and making some funny sign or giving funny advice, but one should just neglect those things and be fixed. And the third advice which is given is to strictly follow the advice of the spiritual master as the means of subduing the mind. Now we can see also an example I taught is also relevant to see is sometimes how the mind become the wrong advisor in a devotee life. And often, I mean, I don't know, often I saw that's what I feel, I don't know if it's exactly like this, but I feel sometimes devotees are hurt in some issues that happened in their life, and then they leave the devotee association. And then one can easily suppose that the mind is preaching inside. Why? See what they have done to you. Better you leave those type of people. They are not so good. And then the mind is preaching and preaching and preaching. And everywhere, actually, in devotee life, it's supposed to be less, but everywhere in the world we will have to deal with people sometimes who are not friendly or are not good. Of course, in devotee association we expect that everyone is a saint, but we are not all saints. So I think at that time often we see how the mind can be the false guru and take actually a devotee totally away from Krishna consciousness. But there is a hope. After having seen all those false guru and all those informations, as more as the devotee become Krishna conscious, as more those putanas will lose their strength. As more Krishna is growing in our heart, as more those putana will be extinguished, will disappear actually from our life. Here is a quote for you. Anyone who wants to achieve genuine love for Krishna must give up false teachers, whether they be mundane religionists, priests, secular teachers, that's from Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, materialist counselors, friends or family members. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, that is better to associate with sense enjoyers that to Dharma Vajis, those who are pretending to be spiritualist, but are actually not following the rules of spiritual life. I mean, that's the strongest thing. I will not say something any stronger than this. A last quote, according to what is a real guru or what is not a real guru, just one. One who is greedy to get worship, praise and money from his disciple is a bogus guru. A true spiritualist is an ocean of mercy, perfect, a person who does good to everyone, free from all material desires, fully knowledgeable, able to cut apart all doubts and not lazy. So this anatta itself is, because we hear about the false guru that seems to be something out of us. So we hear those demons represent an anatta. So how to represent the false guru of an anatta inside of us? And I had to ask Satchinandana Swami, I just could not get the answer. And he told me that the anatta itself is when one actually accepts the teaching of those false guru. One accept those and take them, and also when one is satisfied only with the external practice of spiritual life, but do not try to go actually into the inner meaning of all those practices. So I would like to end this lecture by speaking about now the amazing mercy of the Lord. Because Krishna gave a very, very special position to Putana. He gave her the position of a nurse in the spiritual world. Most of the demons, they got just liberation, but Putana got a place in the spiritual world. So how is that? In Srimad Bhagavatam we have a verse from Uddhava who is crying, is remembering how merciful was Krishna to Putana. How can it be? How can my Lord be so merciful to her? Putana was the chief demon. She was the sister of Agasura, the sister of Bakasura. What a family. She was so demoniac, nobody could find any fault in her demoniac tendency. She was cruel. She was a cruel person. But she had one small moment as in her form of Ratnamala where she had desire to serve Krishna. And see how is our Lord. It's not only unconditional mercy. The Lord took just this small tendency or this small desire to serve that Putana had. He just took that and he just purified her of all other bad stuff. He just took this small amount of good that was in this demon and rejected all other, but he accepted this small part of good. And here we can see the miracle that is happening since actually Prabhupada came to the West to bring Krishna consciousness. How many asuras or how many people in general come in touch with Krishna consciousness and can render a small service? Maybe by buying a book, maybe by giving a donation, or maybe by praising a devotee, or being kind with a devotee. They are all making a small service. And see what Krishna did with this small service Putana did to him. So it's just amazing. Amazing mercy. It's almost difficult to understand this two sides. She's so demoniac, and Krishna gave her such high position. Just for this small, teeny desire to serve. And this small desire to serve the Lord, this is actually our true value in life. Those small moments of true desire to serve, this is what is our life really. What is really meaning in our life. So here is the verse that Uddhava is saying. Alas, how should I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of a mother to a Shiriman Putana. Although she was unfaithful and she prepared deadly poison to suck from her breast. Radhanath Swami explained that for one who is proud, when he will hear this verse is not so relevant. Okay, Putana gave, Krishna gave his mercy to Putana, okay. But I'm a great devotee, I'm fine, I have everything I need. But for one who is truly humble, this verse sounds like nectar. Because the devotee who is humble feels, I'm actually so fallen, but Krishna gave such mercy to even Putana. So I have hopes. So the devotee who is humble will relish this verse like a big pot of nectar. So Putana, who was a demon, got this position. What to speak of someone who is neutral toward Krishna? What to speak about someone who has faith? And what to speak about someone who has bhakti? What position is waiting for him? And we might think that's exceptional mercy. Krishna gave that to Putana, but I don't think he will give it to me. But one should have hope that Krishna can give this mercy to everyone. He who hears with faith the childhood pastimes of Krishna, Krishna Arbakam, and the liberation of Putana, and takes them as most astonishing, attains attraction for Govinda. So by hearing these pastimes of Putana and thinking, yeah, they are truly astonishing. They are not just like a story, but they are really amazing. Then he will develop his attraction for Govinda. So I think we will stop here. I have prepared a little song that we could sing together. It's from Krishna Lila Stava. That's actually 8 verses in the praise of Krishna in the killing of Putana. So I thought we could chant that together a little bit. And I think while I will sing it, I would request you to just read the translation of the song, so that when you sing it, you know what you are singing. You are just not following the words, but you have a little idea of what means the singing. But I think before the song, I just would like to see if there are questions, or I think there could be a lot of comments also, and I will be happy if our scholarly senior assembly of Vaishnava would like to contribute to this. I'm really like a beginner. I mean, I just took all those information and try somehow to put them into a chronology or understandable order. But maybe you have something to add on it, and maybe more also on the level of how is that relevant in our life, or how do we see that in our life. So it would be nice maybe to have a little exchange on that. I see Shyamachandra.
Just came to my mind, which you can most probably will present it more, this verse which you just in the end was reading. This is also the verse when Gadara Pandit approached Pundarika Vidyanidhi.
Yeah, that verse was spoken also to. I don't know if you know that story. Who of you know that story? One? Yeah, many more knows. Huh? I can tell it super fast. I mean, there was a king. Oh, was it a king? Pundarika Vidyanidhi?
Not sure, but a rich man.
He was a very rich devotee. And Gadadhar Pandit was invited by one of his friends. Anyone know the name of his friend?
Was it Shrivas?
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, Gadadhar Pandit was invited to go and take darshan of Pundarik Vidyanidhi, who was such a rich devotee. And when Gadadhar saw Pundarik Vidyanidhi, he had like really very beautiful clothes, perfume in his hairs, everything was so opulent in the place he was living, that Gadadhar thought, oh, that's not a real devotee. I came to take darshan of a devotee, and I see this person who is enjoying luxury so much. That cannot be a devotee. And Srivas, or the friend of Gadadhar Pandit, understood his mind, and he recited that verse, which say, oh, what mercy, oh, to whom else should I surrender that this Lord who gave such mercy to Putana? And when Pundarik Vidyanidhi heard that verse, although he was in this position of very rich person, he just became mad. He just broke down his clothes and just fell on the floor and rolled down, and had tears in his eyes, and was just in total ecstasy just to hear that verse. And then Gadadhar Pandit understood, actually he's a real devotee, his heart is full of devotion. Yeah, thank you for mentioning.
And just a linguistic question, what does anatta mean?
Anatta means unwanted, something that is unwanted, or obstacles. That's what it means. That's many bad habits, thought patterns that one has inside of us, like greed, envy, proud, pride. All those things are some types of anatta. If you come, we will speak. There are many demons that are coming in Vrindavan. I think 24 demons altogether. So they represent like 24 different type of anattas that are in the living entities, and that need to be thrown out so that one can be free from material entanglement. So that's. Anyone else? Yep.
What can one do? Sometimes it seems that anything, how we can engage the mind, no taste for nothing.
Yeah.
For anything. Maybe some things we, little moment before we like really to do, and then suddenly nothing is.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes my Guru Maharaj will answer very astonishing answer. He will say, sleep more. sometimes, maybe not in your case, but often it happened that the devotees are like in a stress, and they are doing so many things, and they are just pushing their mind in such extreme that the mind is just not wanting to give any collaboration anymore. It's like the total rebellion. And I think Rupa Goswami said sometimes one has to give a little reward to the mind, to give him sometimes nice food and sometimes a bed to sleep in. Like the horse, one should not all the time, but sometimes let go. But I know you are not in that case. It's not the proper answer for you.
More than it's hard to stand up, wake up in the morning, because I think, why should I stand up? No, nothing. And then it's really strong, but it's really heavy sometimes. Mm-hmm. Do anything.
I mean, I give quite a basic answer on that, but I think if you take care of association, of taking good association, regular association with Srila Prabhupada in reading his books, that I would say the main one, the first one. And the second one, look all the Vaishnavas that are around you, look those who inspires you the most, and go to them with question, go to them to ask for advices, and try to follow those advice, and then you get the spark. But I'm not so satisfied with that answer. Maybe Jai Sachinandana, would you like to help?
Yeah, just like if you want to go to the army, when you go first time to the person who was living normal civilian life, when he goes to the army, what do they do to him? Mm-hmm. They shave his head. They change his clothes. They put him to sleep at time they want. They give him food they want. So you're completely at their... They change your complete environment. They put you into a completely different movement. So the same way, if you want to change your consciousness, and then you change your consciousness, you become a soul. And you have one guru who was your superior, and he tells you, run, jump into the fire. So in the same way, you have to put yourself in a different guna, higher guna. But certain things, you know, from Bhagavad Gita, how to live in the higher guna. If you are in indolence, you know the word indolence? What's indolence?
Indolence.
So this is the quality of mode of ignorance. So if you are procrastinating, you're also not procrastinating. What's the procrastination? Zögern,
alles
aufschieben. Aufschieben. Genau. Aufschieben. You have to aufschieben, and if you have indolence, this is the quality of ignorance. So therefore, you have to transcend, you have to put yourself in mode of at least passion, the best place. So you have to cultivate mode of goodness. And then by cultivating mode of goodness, you'll put yourself into different guna, and by association, and by clothes, and by doing the activities which you don't usually do. So all these things together mixed put you in a situation that you actually start to put yourself in different guna. And then you will think differently. In different guna you think differently.
Yeah, thank you. You could also make a pilgrimage or go for 1 month or few weeks into a specific temple where there is really like super fire and a lot of spiritual activities that also give a lot of new energy, or also sometimes to have a fixed goal in your mind. What do you want to do for Krishna? What service you want to how do you want to serve Prabhupada and his mission? You know, to have like a fixed goal that you want to do, and then this is a driving force for you to change. But I will make the answer of Jai Sachinandana the basic one where one starts the work.